Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. A decade after the Great Recession hit, state spending on public colleges and universities remains well below historic levels. The Washington, D.C.-based Center on Budget and Policy Priorities has been examining how rising tuition threatens affordability and access for promising students and their families. Producer Clayton Hinkle spoke to the center's Michael Mitchell about his new report on state cuts to higher education entitled Unkept Promises.
Well, Michael, thanks for being back with us on News and Views.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the center is out with a new report titled Unkept Promises, State Cuts to Higher Education Threaten Access and Equity. Tell our listeners, before we get into the specifics, about why you wanted to take this broader look at how our public colleges and universities are faring over the last decade.
Sure. So, high level, I think it's important for listeners to understand how important higher education has served historically and today as an engine of economic mobility. So, we know that folks who are able to attend college, who are able to earn a post-secondary degree, they earn more over the course of their careers, lower rates of unemployment, better health outcomes, and things of that nature. So it's critical that public colleges, which provide education to the largest share of students that do go on to either 2 or 4 year institutions, that they have the resources from the state that they need to be able to provide high quality, accessible education.
Well, one of the first points you make in this report is that overall state funding for our colleges and universities is down by more than $7 billion compared to 2008. Those figures are adjusted for inflation, but it's really an amazing figure.
That's absolutely right. And that's just the aggregate total of spending across the country. That doesn't even take into account the number of students. And we know that today there are about 700,000 more students on college campuses, public college campuses today, than there were just prior to the recession. So that when you take that number, that $7 billion number, and you put it over the number of students, you end up seeing that we're spending somewhere in the ballpark of 16% less per student today. That's about $1,400 per student less today than we were in 2008.
I know when the Great Recession hit, most people thought that state agencies, higher education would all be taking a cut, and indeed they did, but that the money would be restored when times got better. And certainly the economy has been better recently, but that has not been the case, has it, for higher education?
That's absolutely right. So the first piece of what you mentioned is important here. The Great Recession was absolutely one of the largest, it produced one of the largest revenue downturns for states in modern history. And as a result, states had choices to make. They needed to either raise taxes, so make up some of the lost revenue that they saw because incomes fell and because people were purchasing less goods and services, or they needed to cut their budgets. And while most states did a combination of these things, from the research that we've done here at the center, states overwhelmingly chose to cut spending. And one of the areas that received a significant share of cuts was higher education. Now, higher ed is different than some of the other areas of state budgets where, say, like corrections, there is no alternative revenue source. But for higher education, because there's tuition dollars that can be drawn on, states sometimes see this as a place where they can make cuts and allow students or families to make up the difference. In more recent years, as the economy has recovered, I'll say first, though, the recovery has actually been quite sluggish. When you look at revenue, state and local tax revenue, particularly state revenue, we've seen that it's taken a significant amount of time to get us back to and now above pre-recession levels. And then states also can play a role in that by creating their own headwinds by cutting taxes even further, which makes it more difficult to raise revenue. So all of those various factors, the depth of the recession, the kind of sluggish recovery of revenue, state policy decisions in terms of tax cuts, all contribute to making it more difficult to prioritize putting money back into higher education.
Well, how do these cuts manifest themselves on a campus? I imagine it's more than administrative cuts that really go unnoticed and unfelt by the students themselves.
Oh, that's absolutely right. So in states across the country, over the years, particularly in the years where states were making drastic cuts to college budgets, higher education systems, specific schools were having to make choices about how they were going to balance their own campus budgets. And what we saw was, in part, it was raising tuition, But also it was things like consolidating programs, closing certain campuses in some instances, closing labs, reducing the other kind of supports, tutoring, lab access, things like that, that students depend on to be able to take full advantage of their education, but also, more critically, to graduate in a reasonable amount of time. If you can't access a class because it's not being offered a particular semester and you need that class to graduate, well, you have to stay on for an additional time, and that can add up. So that's absolutely right that these cuts were not just to administrative positions or to consolidating faculty necessarily, but to other places where students absolutely felt them.
So now we have 45 states that are spending less per student in 2018 than they did in 2008. And some of the numbers really were jaw-dropping. You do a state-by-state analysis. Arizona, for example, they've decreased their spending by more than 55%.
Some of these states have actually radically dramatic declines in the amount of state investment. So Arizona, as you mentioned, has reduced spending on a per-student basis by about almost 56%. On a per-dollar basis, that's about $3,700 per student that they've reduced their state spending. Louisiana is also up there. The state cuts at around 40%, which is for that state is about $4,900 per student cut. And we see a pretty significant decline for a good number of states. More than 30 states actually have cut student funding by over 20% on a per student basis over the past decade.
How's North Carolina faring?
So North Carolina is just under that 20% threshold at about 18.6% cut on a per student basis. In dollar terms, that's about $2,300. And then on the other end, if we talk about tuition, we can look at published tuition in North Carolina is up 45%, which is actually above the national average over that time period, which was at about 36%.
That's amazing. So if states are spending less per student, students and families are indeed making up the difference in the form of higher tuition. And I imagine that 45% has to come from somewhere. Maybe your savings. It may very well be that you're taking on more student loans.
That's right. So first, there has been a significant number of research that draws the connection between state cuts and rising tuition. It is not obviously accounting for the entire increase in tuition. There are other factors at play as well, but it is a large contributing factor. So that's important for people to understand that when lawmakers make the decision to cut state investment in higher education, one of the outcomes of that is going to be in part higher costs, higher tuition costs. For families, then there's a number of challenges. The first is understanding what they're going to actually pay. And as published tuition increases, this disconnect between the price that they see and potentially what they'll have to pay either through after you take into account grants, institutional aid, and other scholarships and the like, it becomes murkier. And for low-income students, for middle-income students who maybe haven't navigated the college searching process or haven't seen friends or family or parents navigate that process, it becomes very difficult, and we can see in research that low-income students oftentimes do see sticker prices, that published tuition, as a deterrent from applying to college or as a signal that they need to choose a less selective because they perceive it as a cheaper college, which in many cases might actually be the exact opposite. And so this has implications for where a student goes to college, which can impact lifetime earnings, or it has implications for how much debt they take on. And we can see over the past few years that the proportion of students who take on debt has increased and the amount of debt has also gone up after adjusting for inflation.
Some of our listeners may be wondering if federal student aid has kept pace to help students in covering this increase in some of the college expenses. Has it?
So right after the recession, the Pell Grant, because folks were seeing either declines in incomes or people were losing jobs, as more people qualified, the Pell Grant responded. And so it was able to provide more students with the resources they needed to attend college. There were also policy changes to boost the amount of the Pell Grant, and that was able to help absorb some of the rising cost of tuition. Now, a couple of things. One, there is a longer-term trend of rising tuition that the Pell has not grown enough to cover. So if you look over a longer period of time, the proportion of tuition that the Pell actually covers for the average student has gone down. The other trend is that tuition is not the only cost that students are trying to cover. So while the Pell Grant and the increases in the Pell Grant at the time of the recession and in the following years was able to cover, for on average for students who were eligible, it was able to cover the rise in tuition, it was not able to cover the additional costs of books, of room and board, of transportation that also make it difficult for low-income and middle-income kids to be able to go to college. So even for the lowest-income kids who are eligible for the Pell, they have also experienced a rising cost because of all these other pieces, regardless of the Pell Grant.
We've talked about low-income families and students. Let's talk a little bit about communities of color, because your report also notes that this trend comes at a time that we're seeing an increase in the number of students from communities of color enrolling in higher education. Talk a little bit about the impact of rising tuition, how that harms students of color and reduces campus diversity, and why that is something we really do need to pay attention to.
The first piece here, for a bit of a history lesson, is for a significant portion of our history, folks of color, women, were not able or allowed to attend most institutions of higher learning. And so for a long, significant period of our history, this was not an avenue that was broadly available to them. And so in recent decades, as the proportion of folks of color have grown on college campuses, so when we can look back in 1980, the proportion of students of color on public college campuses was around 17%. And today, we know that that proportion is over 40%. And so there's been significant strides in increased diversity among public colleges and universities across the country. Now, at the same time that this has happened, there has also been a long-term trend of state divestment in higher education, meaning that as the proportion of students of color has grown, the share of state dollars has fallen, and the onus of paying for, the burden of paying for public college has increasingly shifted to students and families. So we have this very interesting long-term trend of increased diversity and more reliance on funding from individual students in their homes. So that's the first interesting thing. The second piece is that due to a whole range of barriers from education, from K-12 to higher ed, income disparities, employment disparities, the lack of ability to raise wealth through access to stable and high-quality housing, we can acknowledge a significant range of income and wealth disparities that play out along lines of race. And when you talk about needing to afford college, if you come from a background that is facing all of these systemic barriers, then it becomes even more of a hurdle to be able to afford an education, regardless of it being public or private. And so one of the things that we looked at in the report this year, as mostly as a measure just to indicate the magnitude of the disparity here, is if you look at average tuition and fees at a four-year university as a share of household income, you can see significant difference in what the typical overall family might pay versus what it looks like for communities of color. So, for instance, in North Carolina, overall, if we were to look at average tuition and fees at a public four-year university in North Carolina as a share of the median household income, so that household right in the middle of North Carolina's families, household families' earnings, that tuition is about 13.6%. For black families in North Carolina, it's almost 19%. And for Hispanic families, it's about 18%. So it takes up a much larger share of their household earnings than it does over the average family overall.
May very well dissuade some families from actually pursuing a higher degree. In the time we have left, you talk about that states can do more to ensure college affordability and accessibility. Talk to us about that. What should policymakers be doing to reverse this trend?
Sure. So we note a number of things in the report. The first, obviously, is states should invest and appropriate dollars needed to colleges to keep prices down, to keep it affordable, and to keep quality high, so to make sure that students have access to all of the different services and supports that they need while they're on a college campus to graduate and graduate on time. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, states can also be ensuring that the students who need additional support in the form of need-based aid have the resources there. And need-based aid is very critical here because it can be targeted directly to the students who are most in need, and it can also be structured in a way that encourages students to graduate in a timely fashion. You can build in the kind of structure into it to encourage students to stay on campus and to graduate, you know, in about 4 or 5 or 6 years. The other thing that we note in the report is that as more states are experimenting with what we call performance-based funding, which is just holding colleges accountable to a set of outcomes and then determining how much they're going to provide maybe in additional resources to that school based on how they do on those outcomes. Unfortunately, the measures that states have been using to determine if a school is doing well or not have been woefully inadequate in actually capturing how valuable or how well a school is doing in educating its students. And so for a number of campuses, particularly minority-serving institutions, HBCUs, and also regional campuses who are oftentimes taking in students that either are coming from non-traditional backgrounds or are coming from backgrounds where maybe their K-12 schools haven't been as great or are coming from just backgrounds where maybe they're working jobs to be able to afford college, and so they have less time needed. Unfortunately, these performance metrics oftentimes don't take into account all of these different dynamics of the student body and then end up penalizing these schools for having perhaps lower graduation rates or lower employment rates of their students who do graduate. And so states really should take a look at making sure that they're sending resources to the colleges that, when you do have the right measures, are actually doing a pretty good job. Just to recap, states should make sure that they're appropriating enough resources through their budgets to colleges overall, target aid to the students who need it the most, and then make sure that they're not penalizing campuses that are actually trying to do what the true spirit of public higher education, which is expanding access to folks who haven't had that opportunity in the past.
Well, the report is Unkept Promises: State Cuts to Higher Education Threaten Access and Equity. Mike Mitchell is a senior policy analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He's a co-author of the report, and thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.